Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, have you been a jerk? Sometimes, huh? I have. And what does that do? How do we live with our jerkiness? And why? How can we improve ourselves? And maybe we can't. But maybe we should. And so to help us find out how to live a better life in Buddhist precepts even, let's take it to a higher level of non-jerkiness. And to help us do that is the author of a wonderful book written by Brad Warner, who's been on the show a number of times before, has written a number of books about Zen Buddhism. And he's a Zen Buddhist priest himself. And he wrote this book called Don't Be a Jerk. Brad, welcome to Energy Stew.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here and can help us live a little bit more honorably.
Well, thanks. I'll do my best.
Right. And so what is it that, you know, this is about Zen Buddhism, and the book is really following the writings of an ancient master who wrote a book 800 years ago named Dogen. And he wrote it in Japanese. And fortunately, you can speak and read Japanese.
Yeah, after a fashion, yeah. I lived and worked in Japan for 11 years, so I got a pretty good grounding in how to speak Japanese. But, of course, his Japanese is 800 years old, so it's a little tough. It's tricky.
Yes, and it took a lot of insight for you. And also your background in Zen Buddhism allowed you to understand it a lot better than anyone else might have who's not that well versed in that.
Well, yeah, I've been studying and practicing Zen for 30 some years now, and it's just I started in Ohio. I grew up in Ohio and then moved to Japan for a number of years, like I just said, and got ordained a priest over there, kind of in a weird way. I wasn't really planning to get ordained, but I had a teacher who wanted me to, and he was very... He had done one of the first complete English translations of this book, Shobo Genzo. That was kind of his life's work that he was doing. So I was with him a lot of the time he was working on this. So I got a lot of what I know about Shobo Genzo comes from him.
Right. Now, this is an important book written 800 years ago, and yet it wasn't really read for hundreds of years.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about Shobo Genzo to me, or one of the interesting things, is it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't read. It was, Dogen wrote it, and he seems to have written it for some kind of public consumption. So he wasn't just writing it as a diary to himself or something. But 800 years ago in Japan, there wasn't such a thing as publishing the way we know it. So I think a few copies, maybe a dozen copies or something, circulated among his followers. The temple that he established in Japan became very popular, very influential, created a whole network of temples and things. But the writings that he wrote were kind of lost until the 20th century, really. They emerged a couple of times before that, but it was in the 1920s or so when a lot of Japanese academics got into reading Dogen and popularizing Dogen. So it's actually a very old book and a very new book.
Well, let's just talk about what he was up to and what we need to know about it, because it goes into the deepest understandings of let's call it mind and not mind.
Yeah.
And Zen Buddhism, for a lot of people, it's an understanding of being present and not being in your mind as much as you can not be in your mind. And there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that our minds, let's say, can't be trusted.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's one of the things. I mean, Dogen was a guy who, you know, he was probably the illegitimate son of an aristocrat, and his father died when he was very young. I think about, what was he, 4 years old or something like that, and his mother died when he was 7 years old, so he lost both of his parents early on. Became a monk quite early in life, like 11 or 12 years old, he entered a monastery, and then he was not really satisfied with Buddhism as it existed in Japan in those days, and he went to China and studied in China and came back to Japan with this form of Buddhism. Yeah.
And he represented that and wanted to be a teacher to the public.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it wasn't saying that I'm so smart, I'm a master, so I need to only teach to elite minds. Because the understanding of Buddhism is that you don't have to be an elite mind.
No, no, you don't even have to be very smart. Dogen himself seems to be very smart and very well-read, but he kind of emphasizes over and over in his writings that you don't really have to know all that much. The practice that he recommended and taught is really simple. It's called Shikantaza, which is just sitting. And it's a kind of meditation in which you don't do anything. It's very interesting in that you know that we have a lot of mindfulness and a lot of these different practices, and guided meditations are very popular these days. But what Dogen was working with was something different from that, in which you just sit. You sit very still and you're very quiet, but you're just aiming for nothing.
Well, the thing is that you can't get nothing.
Yeah,
because your mind isn't going to leave you alone.
That's the problem. Yeah.
So, if the mind isn't going to leave you alone, then where's the truth of stillness?
Well, you find the stillness is underlying everything. So even when there's movement and there's noise going on, there's always this ground of stillness under there. And it usually takes a while for people to see that. You know, I started practicing this when I was about 18 years old, so I was restless and jumpy and nervous and everything. So it took me years to finally get to anything like stillness.
And even then,
yeah,
you're only, you know, your mind is still actively watching your stillness.
Sure, yeah. So your mind is always there.
Right.
It's a kind of a, somebody was coming up with this problem of like, one of my friends, she was overthinking, you know, thinking a lot and kind of repeating the same patterns. And I said, well, you know, my feeling on that, because I do it too, is you can't really make that stop. Everybody kind of looks for a way to make that stop. But what you can do is you can kind of step aside from it. And that's the trick.
Well, I think what you do, and I don't think of it as stepping aside so much as making it okay.
Yeah, you can do that as well. Yeah. Well, you know, nothing is wrong. That's another part of aspect of the type of meditation Dogen taught, is that nothing is wrong with you,
right,
to begin with.
So because what he teaches is that we can never be clear in mind.
Yeah.
And because we can't be clear in mind, then we can't find perfection.
Yeah, perfection is kind of an illusion.
Right,
anyway.
So let's call it a delusion.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, says that if you think that you're not deluded, you're deluded.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of his favorite, you know, famous passages, I can't even remember exactly the quote, but seeing the truth of delusion is how you become enlightened. You know, you become enlightened in your delusion.
To be honorable to your delusion.
Yeah, yeah. Which doesn't mean you just allow it or just say, you know, I'm just deluded, so I'm just going to go be a jerk all my life.
No, but the thing is, well, we want to talk about that too.
Yeah.
But the thing is that everything is perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we're all bumping around in our imperfect perfection,
mm-hmm.
or perfect imperfection. And that has to be okay because we can't do any better.
Yeah, well, that was Dogen's big question was, if we're all perfect just as we are, then why, as Buddhists, do we do these practices like meditation?
Well, that's what I wanted. Not only meditation, but why are the precepts so important?
Yeah. The precepts, the way my teacher always talked about the precepts, there are 10 Buddhist precepts, and they're quite similar to the 10 commandments. In fact, there's a couple, or there's like three or four that are exactly the same, but they're just basically moral ethical sort
so
of
So that
things.
You're not a jerk.
Yeah, so that you're not a jerk. But we have them because we get twisted up in our own thoughts. And I think this is my pet theory, is that as human beings, we have one natural defense. You know, the thing that created this whole civilization that we have is our brains. Because out in the wild on the African savanna, we didn't have much
but
going for us.
The brains haven't created it very well.
That's the problem. You know, the brains are what's responsible for our survival and our success, but they're also our undoing. Because they can lead us into all sorts of wrong
trouble.
Yeah, and you can. One of the scariest things that I found in like just meditating one day, and I don't even remember exactly the time, was that I just saw my mind working, and I realized I could justify anything, like any action.
Yeah.
I could just come up with a justification, and
yeah.
I thought, oh my God, this is how everything, you know, happens. This is how Al-Qaeda and the Nazis and everybody else works,
because
you can justify anything, you know.
Except that you'd also translate Dogen mm-hmm. in saying that in order to live the precepts properly, you need to know right from wrong.
Yeah.
And if you're in balance, there's no question.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's something I always sort of, you know, I've lived with that idea for, you know, 30-odd years. And I had a teacher who always emphasized that everybody knows right and wrong intuitively. And I look around the world even now after practicing this, and I sometimes go, is that true? Is that true? But I still believe it because I can see it at work with myself. And I don't think I'm that different from other people. But just because you know what's right doesn't mean you're going to do it.
Well, there are people who are conditioned by propaganda.
Yeah.
And those people are confused. And they fight for what they think is right and do terrible things.
Yeah.
But they're not in balance.
Yeah, I mean, that whole ends justify the means thing doesn't really work. If in the moment you can see clearly that this is not what you should be doing, then you stop. But sometimes you're so deep into it that becomes
right.
That's difficult.
Conditioned
right there.
So much
yeah.
by it. And so I think we do live in a world of extreme conditioning.
Sure. Especially these days. I mean, it's just 24/7. I'm looking at the computer monitor as I say this, and I'm thinking, you know, people are just, you know, bringing this stuff into their minds constantly, you know, and all this stuff and all this information. Most of it's kind of useless, you know. But we're just pouring it into our brains
well,
all the time.
Let's just say that we live in a very confused world right now, and there's a lot of fear, and it doesn't look good in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And then we want to sit in Zazen mm-hmm. and be mindless. And for a lot of people, that's really hard to do when their brains are frazzled.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is, and I'm always telling people this when they come to me for meditation advice, is if you're sitting, a lot of people will start doing a meditation practice and they're frazzled and there's stuff going on and they go, well, I must be doing it wrong. And I always say, no, that isn't, you're not doing it wrong. You're starting to notice what's really going on. And that's the first step. You know, that's how you find out what to do about it.
Well, I think what it is to get to that place where you know that it's all delusion.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter what it is. It just is.
Yeah.
And then it becomes the same, and it's the Buddha mind that exists in everything, everywhere.
Yeah.
And so that includes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole Buddhist teaching is not to be attached to it, but to recognize that it is delusion, and in a sense surrender to being caught in it and separate at the same time.
Yeah, and you're still trying to do what's right in that realm.
Right.
You know, there's no that's kind of the tough part of Zen often, because a lot of people like a kind of a flowery escapist sort of idea, and it's very attractive. It's attractive to me too, you know. But we're always saying, well, you know that escape is just more delusion on top of it. What's better is to just face what's actually going on. And if you do that, most of the time you find out it's you can deal with it.
It's just what is.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do because there's so much fear involved.
Yeah. Well, fear is just, you know, fear is a natural, it depends what you're talking about as in fear, but fear is naturally arises sometimes as a survival mechanism, you know. But we as human beings have let our survival mechanisms kind of go crazy a little bit, you know, because we're pushing those buttons.
Yeah, you know? And our buttons are being pushed too.
Yeah, yeah.
I always teach that we come here into life to suffer, and in the suffering, we have to dig deeper to find truth, to find light and love.
Yeah.
And in that search, we grow our souls.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's this, one of the first Buddhist priests or the precepts of Four Noble Truths is usually translated as all life is suffering.
Right.
But it's not suffering in the sense of misery and despair, although there's certainly that to it. But it's unsatisfactory experience because you want it to be other than it is.
Because it's so transitory.
Yeah, and you want it to be something different. Most of us do.
Yeah,
most of the time, in some sense, you know, you want it to be something different. If you can learn to accept, you can be a lot more comfortable. But acceptance doesn't mean complacency. I think that's a...
Or compliance.
Important. Yeah, yeah, or compliance, definitely. So acceptance is how you start to move and how you start to make things better by first accepting how it is.
I learned a lot from the Bhagavad Gita. Hmm. And it's that story where this prince, Arjuna, has to go to battle.
Right.
And turns out his chariot driver is Krishna, who was his lifelong friend. He didn't know that Krishna was God, but all of a sudden, out in the middle, before the battle starts, and they're in between both sides, out in the chariot, Krishna tells him, oh, by the way, you know, we're
God.
Good friends, but I'm God. and I have something to tell you. And he preaches the Bhagavad Gita to him in the chariot before the battle starts. And then Arjuna, at the end, sees all is one and everything is, you know, the light and everything. And he says, and the battles are ready to start. And he says to Krishna, I can't go to battle now because I know that we're all one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Krishna says, yes, but you came here to be a warrior.
Yeah.
And you have to live that out. So go to battle and good luck.
it's a hard lesson. Yeah, that's one of those great ancient stories from India. But yeah, you do what you do, and you don't shirk your duty.
You have to be true to yourself.
Yeah.
So you might not be a warrior, but whatever you are, we are all warriors in life for that survival idea.
For sure, yeah.
And we all come here with specific roles to play, purposes. And the idea is to be true to it in, you know, the din of fire, you know, to have to apply ourselves in this world rather than escape it.
Yeah. And it's hard to find that sometimes. I mean, that's kind of what Dogen had that big question. Why do we need to practice if we're perfect as we are? And I think he discovered that his purpose in life, I suppose, was to put that on paper. I'm not sure, you know, if that's what he imagined his purpose in life would be.
Well,
I think that's
maybe
kind
he
of
didn't
we,
know yeah. how far it would travel.
He probably didn't. You know, it's amazing to me that this stuff just got there. There's one thing that came up during the writing of this where he makes this metaphor. He says I forget what he's even saying, but he says it's like an iron rail 1,000 miles long. And I thought, oh, he's describing a railroad track. And then I go, no, wait a minute. There were no railroads in the 1200s in Japan. They hadn't been invented yet. So, you know, where does he get this? Yeah. You know, where does he get these metaphors and things from? I don't know. He's a fascinating guy. He wrote so much stuff.
Well, the book is really fascinating because it covers so much territory. It goes on in so many different ways about life and how to live it and how to know it, really. It's about understanding the basic underlying truths of life.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it constantly wakes you up.
Yeah, yeah. He's an interesting guy because he was young when he wrote this. I'm starting to realize that now as I get up to, you know, the age that Dogen died when he was 53 or 54. It's difficult to date.
You're getting close.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm getting close. And I start to realize, oh, he was writing this when he was young. So I think this is one of the things that gives Dogen's writing a kind of unique character to it, because when you read the words of an ancient Zen master, you're sort of imagining this kind of Yoda-like figure, you know, propping himself up on a stick and whatever, and he's ancient. But Dogen was writing these things when he was 30 and 40 years old. But he was already really, really wise by that time, which also makes it different.
Well, I think there's a higher way to be when we know that it's just the stuff, you know, that we're just living the stuff, and to hold it in that perspective that we all have our stuff, and how self-important do we have to make it?
Yeah, yeah, and be honest about it. You know, that's kind of, I see a lot of in the kind of new agey or meditation world that I travel in sometimes when I'm talking and promoting a book and all that. I see this kind of strong desire to deny what, you know, among people what they really are, which, you know, I can understand that. People say, oh, I'm a mess, and they kind of adopt this persona of the, you know, enlightened, awakened being or something. But I think it's better to honestly know what you are and then find a way to make that work, you know, than to try to create something unreal.
Right. I love to see that because I work with human design system. Mm-hmm. I use destiny cards and all these different ways, and numerology and astrology, all these different ways of knowing ourselves, so we can watch ourselves in having that perspective and then accept ourselves.
That's a tough thing, you know, to accept yourself, you know. That you know, I titled the book Don't Be a Jerk, but first you have to kind of accept that you are a little bit of a jerk, you know.
Right.
And we all are.
We all have our glitches.
Yeah, and then find a way to make that into something. I feel like Dogen's a great example because he doesn't really hold back his feelings. You know, when he finds something to be stupid or ridiculous, he'll say, "This is stupid and ridiculous." Uh-huh. You know, and he doesn't. And so, in some ways, he's a bit abrasive, but he's not abrasive in a way that he wants to destroy anything or hurt anybody. He just wants to be. He's got something to say, and he's going to try to find the most direct way to say it.
Right. And it's leading us to a greater purpose. So we're caught in, let's say, the pea soup of life, and we're trying to swim through it, and seeing it from a higher perspective is that it's just what is, and the universe is whole within all of that, or outside, you know, around it, in it, of it. It's all one of the story.
Yeah.
It's the story of the universe, and we're in the story of the universe, so let's just hold it universally.
Yeah, in a very real way, we are a reflection of the universe. We are exactly the universe. He says, Dogen has this great line where he says, a dewdrop on a blade of grass can reflect the entire sky, and he's trying to say that even though we feel that we're small and insignificant, and in some sense we are, we're also reflecting the entire universe and all of time. It's really
so
neat.
Right. So in Zen, in the practice, the idea is to be in that dewdrop.
Yeah.
And reflect the universe.
Yeah.
And let it be.
Yeah. Definitely. You're trying to find a way. He says something like realization doesn't break the dewdrop or something. There's a great line, and I'm not coming up with it exactly, but it's that we can be ourselves and still reflect the great universe, and that's the kind of magic of it.
It's the holding the wholeness of it, yeah. The completeness of it. With all its stuff on within,
yeah.
But to be on in the completeness of it and just let it be, and in that beingness, you actually expand your consciousness into the wholeness of it all.
Yeah, yeah. Or you see how it's already expanded. That's
well, then that's how you join it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's so great to talk about this, and I'm glad that we can. Carry our audience towards this book, Don't Be a Jerk, because it's actually Don't Be a Jerk is really about being caught in the story,
yeah,
rather than seeing it as a story.
And that's the thing. Once you start to see your own story as a story, you become this whole idea of attachment, which sounds so impossible, is just being able to kind of take a little step back. You know, Dogen talks about taking a step back and letting the light shine forth. You know, so you kind of put your own story aside and allow it to be exactly as it is. You're not trying to change it. But you step back from it and allow something greater
to be in the oneness of it. And so you have a website.
Sure. We all do.
And?
HardcoreZen.info, all one word, Hardcore Zen, which is the name of my first book.
Right.
Dot info.
And they can find all your other books. You have this other great title called Sit Down and Shut Up.
Yeah, yeah. And Zen Wrapped in Karma Dipped in Chocolate, which I was telling you before we started. I thought, oh, there's no way they'll use this title. And they used it.
So, right. Yeah. So what's exciting is that you have a very fertile mind about all of this, and you really help people see what counts. And
well,
so they can get out of their own way.
Yeah, thanks. I try, you know. I do what I can do.
Right. So, Brad Warner, the author of Don't Be a Jerk, and other practical advice from Dogen, Japan's greatest master. Wow. You know, it's such a treat to read this book, and I really think the audience should go seek it out.
Well, thank you.
And thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at prn.fm. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. All kinds of things going on, and I'd love to get some feedback. And thank you so much for listening.